celebrating female role models across our community. Live from McRobertson Girls High School in Melbourne, Australia, you're listening to Be Like Her Live on McRob Live.
Welcome everyone, live from the McRobertson Girls High School in Melbourne, Australia, you're listening to Be Like Her Live at McRob Live. My name is Danny and my co-host today is Chloe. Our special guest today is author Eleanor. And so Eleanor, welcome to the show. Our first question for you is, how does it feel to be back at your alma mater, McRob?
Actually, it feels very weird. I have not been here since, I guess I graduated in 1997, so that's quite a large number of years ago now. So yeah, it feels kind of nice though. Surprisingly, I'm getting sort of flooded by sort of memories. It's very nice.
Considering that the school has changed quite a bit, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems amazing. It was quite, when I was here, it was like the 90s. It was pretty run down in the period that I was here. And this whole building that we're in right now was not here. And this seems very nice and quite flash and fancy compared to the sort of very dated facilities we were kind of struggling in when I was a student here. So it's good that there's been some investment in school since I was the last set foot here.
So how did you find the transition from the safety net that is McRob into uni and the job market?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was a bit of a struggle initially for me. I think when I started university, when I graduated, I initially enrolled in arts law at Melbourne Uni, and then I dropped out of my law degree on the first day for various reasons. And then I just did an arts degree at Melbourne Uni, and it was a little bit it was slightly alienating there. I found it, I think arts in particular, because when I was studying it, at least it's probably similar now, but you do kind of 12 hours or 15 hours of lectures and tutorials a week, but otherwise you're pretty much on your own. So it's actually more difficult than I thought it was going to be, I think, to make connections and meet new people. But there were quite a lot of my old school buddies at Melbourne Uni as well. So in that way it was good. But yeah, it took a little while to adjust to the, I guess, the social aspect of being at uni and just being on your own a bit. But it was also kind of amazing to not be having to, you know, rock up to school 5 days a week and do, you know, 6 hours of classes. So, yeah, there were definitely good and bad sides of it. But and also there's a lot more sort of independent learning. And I think I initially did struggle with that. I think my first year of uni, I was just like, oh, God, I've got to, you know, do all the reading and work very hard here just to kind of keep up. And that was a little bit of an adjustment when I first started, but then after the first year, I kind of got used to that and found it not too bad.
So you said that you did an arts degree at Melbourne Uni. Just wondering, we also know that you worked in the government and law.
Yes,
for a bit. Could you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah. So I did start out. Yes, as I said, I enrolled in arts law. It was basically, I had never really had an interest in law, but I got the marks and I was like, oh, well, I should use them. So I went and started this law degree and then went to like the orientation day and was like, oh, do I want to do this? I do not. So I decided not to proceed with my law degree at that stage. And so I did an arts degree and I majored in English and political science. And then I couldn't get a job. And I didn't try that hard to get a job, to be fair. I just kind of finished and I was like, oh, what do I do now? Because it is, I guess, a degree like an arts degree. It was amazing and I learned a lot. I loved it, but it didn't sort of channel me in any particular direction. So at that stage, because I'd done political science, I'd sort of discovered that I was actually pretty interested in how governments worked and how decisions were made. And I kind of realized by that point that actually I was really interested in law, because it was a very kind of very practical and useful way to kind of get involved in the policy side of things. And also I was really interested in human rights, and so I thought I'd see if a law degree was for me. So I ended up enrolling in at Monash Law School and did my degree there. And then after I graduated from law, I got into the I applied for a job at the Court of Appeal in Victoria and was a research associate there for a year, which was an amazing job. It was like just doing research for the judges and sort of being involved in all these very kind of complicated and interesting legal cases, but not having any responsibility really other than getting the research right. It was great. It was probably still my favorite job that I ever had. But that was, it was just like a year long position. And then after that, I thought I was interested in policy. So I decided to I applied for the Victorian Government graduate recruitment program, and then ended up getting a job with the Department of Premier and Cabinet through that program, where I was working as a legal advisor there and sort of working on lots of quite varied and interesting things like the, you know, bushfires, Royal Commission and police integrity stuff. It's a while ago now, so I can't remember exactly what I was working on, but a lot of different kind of things, sort of legislative stuff. And it's very kind of fast paced kind of centre of government thing. So you're constantly looking at new and varied things there. So it was definitely a kind of interesting place to be, but I kind of discovered at that point that I missed the, I'd sort of discovered this weird love of the nerdy side of law when I was doing my law degree and when I was also a research associate at the court. So I was like, oh, I just want to be looking at like these, you know, particular legal cases and issues rather than doing the broader policy stuff, even though that is also interesting. But it was like, I think I discovered that I was probably more drawn to the actual legal practice side of things. So I applied for a job at the Victorian Government Solicitor's Office, which is where I worked for a long time, probably I think 13 years, in the human rights team there. So I was working on human rights law, which was an amazing opportunity and really interesting. Worked on a huge variety of cases there and really loved my work there.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you worked for a long time in government and law. So what made you switch to becoming an author and a writer?
I had wanted to be an author and a writer the whole time. That was kind of my secret, well, not that secret passion. I kind of, since I was like 4 years old and discovered that books existed, I was like, oh, I want to write those. But I hadn't, I don't know, it took me a long time to get the confidence to actually pursue it, I think, because it's such a, it requires a lot of self-drive and motivation to do it, and self-confidence as well, just to kind of believe in yourself and your kind of ability enough to actually commit to the to these big projects, like the big project of writing a novel and just to giving yourself to the time to write that. So it took a long time for me to develop that confidence, I think. And also, well, when I did my arts degree at Melbourne Uni, I was planning to do creative writing, but I actually had quite a rough experience in my first year at Melbourne Uni where I did a creative writing course and I didn't do that well. And I was like, oh God, maybe this is not for me. Really knocked my confidence quite a lot. And I ended up not studying any more creative writing subjects, partly because I think I just kind of was a bit taken aback by, I'd always been very good at English at school and I was like, oh, maybe I'm not, you know, maybe I'm not so good. Maybe I'm not so hot. So I did English literature. Like I studied other people's books rather than writing my own at uni. And then I guess when I started law, it was like, I was just sort of, I don't know, that's the kind of thing where you just kind of, you get on the conveyor belt and it takes you somewhere, you know, you end up being a lawyer at the end of it. If it's quite competitive, you've got to apply for jobs and stuff. It's not necessarily easy, but it is like, it's got a kind of set path that you're on. So, that's how I ended up in the law, but always the whole time I always wanted to write, and I was always writing on the side and doing it at night and when I was commuting and stuff like that. And then I think I turned 40 and then I was like, oh, my God, I'm getting old. I'm not going to live forever. I should, if I actually want to do this, I'm going to have to actually do it. So I wrote a novel and then had some good fortune in that a friend of a friend worked at a publishing company and they were like, he'd read some of my work and he was like, oh, I hear writing a novel. Do you want to send it to me when you're finished? And I was like, yeah, I've got it finished. Here it is. and they offered me a two book contract, which was kind of amazing. So I have subsequently left my kind of legal job for now and I'm working on the second of the two book deal that I had.
So correct me if I'm wrong, your debut novel, The Opposite of Success, released last year in October. Can you tell us a bit more about your book?
Yeah, so it's a contemporary comedy. It's set over the course of just one day, basically. and it follows two women in Melbourne who are having a very chaotic day, kind of dealing with various crises, like professional crises and romantic crises and existential crises. So it's kind of, it started out of like, I just started writing. I didn't have a set plan for how it was going to proceed, but so it kind of developed somewhat intuitively. So it's a I don't know what else to say about it. It's a comedy, but it's also got some, it talks about a lot of ideas and things that were on my, I guess, on my mind when I was writing. So it's kind of explores ideas about parenthood and work, particularly workplace culture and sort of bureaucracies and ambition, climate anxiety, you know, meaning of life, just those things, you know, nothing major.
Does the book have any connection to, I guess, your past maybe at McGrub or as working in the government or in law?
Yeah, I mean, probably not. It does. One of the characters kind of talks about their experience as a teenager, or sort of thinks about their experience as a teenager. So, which is partly about her experience being quite an academically bright teenager and being feeling a bit like socially a little bit on the outer, maybe, because she doesn't really kind of necessarily connect to all of her peers and struggles a bit with that. So that was, I mean, that's probably not so much McRob, but that came maybe from my experience before I came to McRob, where I think I went to a Blackburn High before I came to McRob, and I think I found it a little bit like, I don't know if it's still the same now for teenagers, but it was definitely at the time, but I don't know, it was like a Gen X thing maybe. It was like very uncool to be good at school. So actually McRob was really amazing for me in that way, in that, you know, coming to McRob, which was full of nerds, so I was like, I was among my people. So it was helpful in that way. So that aspect of it is kind of explored a bit in the book, but and otherwise it is definitely influenced by my experience working in sort of government and big bureaucracies, even though it's not directly about any of the workplaces that I worked in. I think some of the things about just working in a big organization are probably true of almost any organization, but particularly maybe sort of government-based organizations, which are very, they can feel very kind of, even though they do really interesting work, but can feel sometimes a bit sort of impersonal, and you're just one and like a tiny little cog in a huge machine, and it can be a sort of a slightly weird and disconcerting experience, especially when you have relationships with your coworkers that are kind of mediated by these power relationships, and these, you know, you're friends with people, but they also have other interests and the interests of the organization you're working for. So it's like a, I don't know, it can be a strange thing to work in an office, as many of you will discover, I guess.
Yeah, so if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Be Like Her Live on McRob Live, from the McRobbers and Girls High School in Melbourne, Australia. My name is Danny, and my co-host today is Chloe, and our special guest today is author Eleanor. So our next question is, at McRob, we all have very crazy high expectations for ourselves. In relation to the main character of your book, Laurie, who all she wants to do is get promoted, accept her body, and end global warming. What advice would you give to students who feel the weight of the world on their shoulders?
Oh, that is a tough question. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I don't know. I probably don't have an easy, glib answer to, I think. I mean, I think the world is incredibly complicated, but there are a lot of people out there trying to work to make it better. And also from a perspective of being a high school student, I know there's a lot of stress and pressure associated with, you know, getting to the end of high school and what you're going to do and getting the marks and passing your exams and all of that kind of thing. It's not necessarily, you know, not everything will depend on that final year of your life. It's kind of, there are lots of different ways that your life kind of takes weird twists and turns. You know, like I definitely did not have a direct route to what I'm doing now. So even if things don't kind of pan out as you're kind of hoping or expecting them to, it's not, you know, it's not the end. It's still just the beginning of your life. You know, there's lots of ways to live a life that can be good, I think.
As a female author yourself, do you take any inspiration from any other female authors, possibly?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many authors that I love. I'm being asked the question. I'm like, what? I don't know any other authors. I particularly love Zadie Smith, who's a British author who's written kind of a number of books that have these. They're all very different, which I really like about them. And she just has a very delightful writing style, and also kind of writes in this very easy to read, interesting way, but also exploring a lot of very complicated ideas, but in a not sort of like academic or kind of exclusionary way. Like, it's very, I really love her books for that. That they kind of value entertainment as much as they do kind of exploration of ideas. And she has great characters. So she's probably one of my favorite authors. And then there's an American author called Laurie Moore, who I also love because she's a very, very funny writer. She's just incredibly witty. She's probably not as well known as Zadie Smith, but she has famously written some amazing short stories. So I highly recommend anyone seek her out if they're looking for some short story information. Examples, because she's just a total master of the form, and would highly recommend her. And there are lots of Australian writers that I really love and admire as well. I'm reading the winner of the Miles Franklin last year, which is called Chai Time at Cinnamon Gardens, which I don't love the title, but the book itself is amazing. It's kind of exploring Sri Lankan history and Australian contemporary life and racism and grief and torture and tragedy. It's amazing. It's a really, really great book. So I'm really enjoying that at the moment.
Yeah. So as a writer, do you think that being a woman in your field has any particular advantages or disadvantages?
It's an interesting time to be writing as a woman, because probably I was actually also involved about 12 years ago in the establishment of the Stella Prize for Writing, which is it's kind of this major award. It's like $60,000 for the best book by a woman or non-binary person every year. And it was created partly on the back of the Miles Franklin Award, which is the most prestigious award for fiction in Australia. For many years that was like just dominated by men, and there were a few years where, you know, they'd have a short list of maybe five or six books and they were all written by men. And so I think there certainly was a bias against the kind of seriousness with which women's writing was approached. And it wasn't, you know, women's books were not reviewed as much, and they didn't get the prizes, they weren't taken as seriously. Since then, though, I think in the last 10 years, there's been quite a shift, I reckon. And I certainly don't feel now that in the current landscape that as a woman that I'm necessarily disadvantaged. It is interesting, though, because there's still in writing, there's still a category called women's fiction, whereas I don't think there is a men's fiction. It's just like there's fiction and then there's women's fiction, which I do find pretty weird. But in some ways, like, it's not necessarily a disadvantage for women, because most of the people who buy books are women. Most people who read them are women. So in terms of if you're someone who wants to write a book that appeals to a big market, then women are the people you should be writing for, because they're the people who are doing the buying of the books. So, yeah, I think it has some – certainly used to have disadvantages, but at the moment I think in some ways it has advantages being a woman.
You said that you're currently writing your second book. Are you able to give us some hints as to what it may be about?
Yeah, I'm writing a book at the moment that – it's kind of exploring ideas about luck and privilege and whether we kind of deserve the things that happen to us in our lives, and that we kind of get in either a good or a bad way. So it follows three siblings after their mother has a car accident, three adult siblings after their mother has a car accident, which leaves her in a coma, and they all kind of come together and there's dramas. They all have kind of individual dramas going in their lives. So I guess it's a family drama with some comedy as well.
So moving on to our next question, this is a bit away from the general discussion we're having, but what does a typical day in your life as an author look like?
at the moment, so I have two kids who are in primary school at the moment. So I guess I get up and I get my kids ready for school. I drop them off at school and then go home. And basically it's not a very glamorous profession in the sense that I sit there at my desk and I just like, I don't know, play a bit of online Boggle and then decide I should probably stop procrastinating and do some writing. So I do write for most of the day while my kids are at school. A little bit of like, it's a mix of writing new stuff, editing stuff that I've written, doing a bit of research sometimes into the things that I'm writing about. I've been doing a promotion for the book that came out last year. So sometimes, some days I'll be going and doing like an interview, like I guess here, doing an event on Friday. I'm going to the Mornington Library is doing an event with me and another author. So there are kind of, which is always quite fun and enjoyable. I kind of wasn't sure whether the publicity side of things would be something that I enjoyed, but it's quite nice. Everyone's always been very warm and friendly. So it's quite a surprisingly fun aspect of it, given that I went into writing because I like to sit alone in my room. But being out in the world, also good. So, it's probably not a profession for people who are highly extroverted and get lonely because there is a lot of, you just need to spend a lot of time on your own thinking and writing and working. So that's basically it. I'm me just sitting in my study trying to write a book. Not very thrilling, I'm afraid.
Do you think that the things that you learned as a teenager or at McGrob have any impact in your current life?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the things you learn as a teenager kind of can continue to contribute to the way that you kind of experience your whole life, you know. I mean, you form a lot of your ideas about life and you discover what you enjoy doing. And, it's not so specifically, you know, I learned how the Australian political system works. So, you know, it's not so much kind of specific things, but I guess developing, there's more sort of stuff you learn about yourself, I think, that contributes for the rest of your life to how you experience things. I do think about my teen years, I guess, especially because I suppose I'm writing books as well. So I'm writing about people who are the age that I was when I was at school sometimes. So I definitely kind of think back to the time. I also wrote a diary when I was at school. So sometimes when I want to indulge in some self-hatred and shame, I will go back and look at that and discover the kind of person that I was and how I felt about things. And in some ways it's surprising to me that there are a lot of things that haven't really changed about how I feel about, I guess, myself and the world, life. Although obviously a lot of things have changed as well, but certainly there are things that remain constant throughout life, I think.
For anyone in the audience who would like to read your book, where can they find it?
Oh, well, hopefully any good bookshop. It's still mostly in most bookshops and also online, so it's on Booktopia. And Amazon, although Amazon are a little bit evil, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend shopping there. But just anywhere, basically. And it's available on ebooks, and there's a great audiobook actually as well that was recorded, so would recommend that.
Yeah, so you mentioned that some things in life stay constant no matter what you go through. I'm curious to know what some of those things are.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's probably, like, I feel like the kind of my general approach to life has probably not undergone any massive shifts since I was a teenager, in the sense that I find that like my way of sort of surviving in the world is to try to find comedy in it and to find things funny where I can. And because, I mean, I think a lot of the world, it's very hard and difficult and bleak. There are a lot of problems. And I think as a teenager, I remember the kind of thinking about this and being like, it can feel overwhelming. So I guess I felt like, how do you, as a tiny little individual ant in this massive ecosystem of the world, but conscious of your tininess in it, how does a person survive that? So I think at the time I thought, well, I may as well just try to find pleasure in life as much as I can and try to you know, basically try to make the world a little bit better in any way that I can for other people and also for myself, just to try to find happiness where it is. And that is still, I think, my basic philosophy of life is to, you know, try to improve the world and try to experience happiness myself for my main goals, which, you know, they're very broad and general and probably not super helpful to anyone. but I think those things, like, and I've tried different ways of, like, you know, I always wanted to kind of contribute to the world, I guess, in terms of that's why I was drawn to working in the public service and working in law and human rights. And I feel like writing a book is not quite as, you know, obviously kind of useful in the sense of you're not sort of like practically fighting for people's rights or anything like that. But I also think this is how I justify it to myself. Anyway, I feel like it does like bringing like for me in my own life experience, like reading books, amazing TV shows, movies, all those things have brought me have other things and amazing music. You know, they're things that have made my life worth living essentially. So, and they're the things that kind of counteract all the kind of the hardness of life and all the stuff that is really a struggle. So I feel like contributing in a way, if I'm writing a book that will make some people laugh, then, you know, that is a way of making the world better, even if it's not as obvious a one.
Yeah. So that's all we have time for today. Thank you for coming to McRob, Eleanor. It's been a great pleasure talking to you live from the McRobertson Girls High School in Melbourne, Australia. You have been listening to Be Like Her Live on McRob Live. My name is Danny and my co-host today was Chloe. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you find today's information useful. Until next time, have a great day.
Celebrating female role models across our community, live from the MacRobertson's Girls High School in Melbourne, Australia, you're listening to Be Like Her Live on MacRob Live. See that?